The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back with enough about me. Richard Dietsch will be on here in a few minutes. I was going to say the Sports Illustrated media columnist. He was forever. he's now at the Athletic. And when I decided to announce I was leaving EEI and going to radio.com back in November, I reached out to Richard and said, I'll come on your podcast if you want. And I came on with him and he did great. He'll talk about that. We start the podcast talking about that. Excuse me. And he was good. I mean, he's always been fair to me. We got into some Aaron Andrews stuff way back, but then we talked on the phone, I remember, and we've had a pretty good relationship since then. I always like him. He's smart. He's funny. He totally gets it. Actually, a good conversation with him, although I don't know if it was his phone line or ours, fucked up. It broke down like three or four times. So our producer here, Mark Moroso, has been doing a great job filling in the interim. We'll have to put that stuff together. We talked to Richard about basically everything. It's actually a pretty wide-ranging conversation about what's going on in media, and it gets crazier and crazier and crazier. You know, over this weekend, and I'm taping this on a Monday morning, the 18th, this Howard Stern thing, I don't know if you guys are familiar with it or not, and obviously Stern's somebody I idolize. I mean, I just grew up listening to all the time. Wendy Williams, I guess, who's she's like a daytime talk show host, criticized Stern. The stuff I rip him for, everyone rips him for, he's a sellout. He's pathetic. He's just an ass kisser. He has a new book coming out. She said, I'll get it, but I'm sure it's going to suck. He's just going to kiss, the ass of whoever, all the stars, ass kiss. He kisses. And Stern played that sound on the air. And I didn't listen. I don't listen to Stern much anymore, the new Stern on Sirius. I really don't. But Stern went fucking ballistic on her. I saw it only because Stuttering John from the old Stern show tweeted it out because, and I'll tell you why in a second. So I found it on YouTube, and Stern, it was vintage. It was almost like, Stern went back in a time machine. It was like seeing Springsteen from 78 in front of you or Larry Bird from 86 playing basketball in front of you or something. It was crazy. Was calling Wendy Williams every word in the book, called her the C word like 15 times, suggested she urinate standing up, called her a rock face, I think. I don't even know what the fuck that means. I mean, just went in like you and was clearly angry. And the audio was not available on Sirius. Sirius, which is a satellite paid service, took it down. Which the Stern fans then went crazy and said, you're a sellout, you're a pussy, what the fuck's going on? I don't know, but I think we're now in a world where if you're paying, this is not FCC, you're paying for something on satellite, they're going to start taking that stuff down now? When you're going to find it anyway. I this stuff is endless to me. We're in a world that's moving so fast in this weird direction of bury shit, hide stuff, get in the way. I don't know, but go look that up. I'll tweet it out. It's on YouTube. And Stuttering John, who I don't want to get too deep into the Stern family weeds here. Left Stern, went to Jay Leno, and they've kind of feuded sort of semi-famously since then. Tweeted out that Howard Stern should be fired from Sirius for this rant. So you now have somebody who's been in the radio business for whatever he's been in for 30 years, suggesting that somebody should lose their job for what they say on a paid service. I mean, there's some bitterness there, obviously. I reached out to him, by the way. I'm going to check right now to see if he wanted to come on and talk about this. He's not responded. Stuttering John has not. So if the Minute fans want to bludgeon him with tweets asking why he won't come on, I'd appreciate that because I think he would then maybe reach out and come on. I emailed him over the weekend. Emailed a bunch of people over the weekend. Actually, I think it's going to be an interesting week here of shows on the podcast. Portnoy tomorrow I'm going to tape, so you'll get him on Wednesday. You're going to get Dietsch on Tuesday when you're listening to this now. And a couple of other ones lined up for the rest of the week. So you get three or four this week. We have hired a producer. We'll announce that later on in the week as well. Paperwork is done. The Minahan Show has a producer. Right now it's a Minahan podcast. It'll be a show, I think, here soon. Although I'm not going to lie, I've had people come up to me. I've seen tweets who say I'm enjoying the podcast. I'm enjoying a daily sort of hour hit. you know, I'm listening to this as opposed to listening to this or that or something else. And I think I'm going to just have people on I want to have on. I like Deitch. You know, I like talking about sports media. Portnoy, I think tomorrow will be interesting. Some stuff I want to go over with him. And then one or two other ones I said as the week goes on. So that's sort of the status, right now as the show goes on. But that Stern thing over this weekend was totally mind-blowing to me. I could not believe it. Absolutely stunned. Although, I guess in the Stern world, there's this woman, Marcy Tuck, I guess, who has sort of taken over Stern's career professionally and has been the one who has moved him away from being this sort of, you know, wild man that he was in his 30s and 40s to the softer, gentler America's Got Talent, friends with Ellen, friends with Rosie O'Donnell, friends with, you know, name your celebrity, Stern, you know. It's easy to criticize Stern, and I criticize him because he's meant so much to me. But I could see professionally why he does it. But it was, in a way, uplifting to hear a rant like that, to know that that guy who, you know, that's the kind of rant, you know, whether you approve in language or not. And I want to get in the Sword and Scale podcast stuff later on this week, too, because this is something that I'm trying to get the host of that podcast on, another guy who lost his job because of advertisers. If you don't like that language and it's on satellite radio, don't pay the money. Cancel your subscription. Easy. Or listen to the 5,000 other channels on Sirius. Or listen to a podcast. Or listen to sports talk, if that's what you want to hear. Knock yourselves out. So, I don't know. It's a crazy time right now, getting crazier. I hope to dig into it a little more this week. Richard Deitch, who I think is, you know, always an entertaining guest. We figured out the phone line stuff, I guess. We'll see. It's going to be work for the producer here to stitch this together. But Richard joins me right now on Enough About Me. Oh, did Jerry Callahan piss and moan that next morning when he found out that I went on Richard's podcast to break the news that I was leaving. He was so fucking pissed off. What is this? The Athletic? The Atlantic? What's going on? He was not happy. Not happy.
First of all, Kirk, good to be with you.
Of course. I'm sorry. Same to you as always. Thank you.
Trying to set the dialogue for your, yeah, pilot, you for your podcast.
of my pretend city, yeah, yes.
Yeah, you should have told Jerry it was the Atlantic. That really would have pissed me off. But I will say this. In my little small corner of the podcast universe, there's never been more, I think, anticipation for a podcast that I did than yours. You know, I've had a couple that have been listened to more for sure, but never the amount of like intensity and fervor, because there were so many people in Boston who wanted to know. I started getting, you know, some of your fans and probably also some of your detractors like saying this is conspiracy theory. You know, I'm not releasing the tape. I mean, it was getting like Zapruder.
Oh, I remember that. Yes, that's right.
Which was great. Yeah, and then eventually it came out, and you know, first of all, I appreciate you coming on. I thought it was a forum where you could really just expand and go along. And while I hear what Jerry's saying, I don't know. You're not going to get an hour and 20 minutes straight on WEEI. They have commercial obligations and other stuff. So
well, I didn't have a lot of interest in going to WEEI. Like, you know, it wasn't a big, you know. I would rather give it to you. I didn't really even desire to give them anything. I forget, like, did we talk
If you remember right, people thought what you were going to do was going to come on and go scorched earth.
Right.
And that wasn't necessarily the podcast. So, you know, again, like, people were accusing me, like, am I on the WEEI payroll? No, I'm not on WEEI payroll.
The
guest is going to give the guest what the guest is going
to
do.
But I'm just trying to think, because it was like, it's 6 months ago or whatever. There was some reason why. There was some intermarriage that led you to dropping it later than you wanted to, though, right? Or am I wrong?
The podcast company asked me, if I remember correctly, the podcast company determines when the podcast is released, and they released it a little later, and I think they probably released it a little later because you were a hot button topic. The Cadence 13, my podcast company, has a relationship with Entercom. But no one ever changed anything on editorial. I mean, you could confirm this now.
Right.
Nothing. There was nothing that we talked about that didn't air. You know, this is what happens when, you know, corporate people get involved. They get a little squeamish. They try to sort of figure out everything. But to certainly, at least in my end, to Cadence 13's credit, they released it and they didn't edit it. They also know if they edited anything, I would have walked. I mean, you can't work for a place with that kind of relationship. And if they start editing your podcast, you stay. That's just not how it works.
Once you give into that, even an inch, you're dead. You know?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. Then it's not my podcast anymore. So everything you heard was on there. You can certainly complain about the interview, but you were unfiltered. Nothing was censored. And yeah, if I remember right, I think it came out about 12 hours after I wanted it to come out. But people listened to it. People seemed to really appreciate your honesty. And like I told you then, I wasn't bullshitting you. It's just very rare to hear people in the sports media talk honestly about mental health, particularly their own. And that stuff saved lives, at least in my opinion. And again, I'm biased here. My mom's a therapist, so I grew up in that world. But it has meaning because men don't do it a lot, and even especially when professional athletes do it, it has real, real impact because I think guys see that and they're like, you know, hey man, I'm not alone if Kevin Love or DeMar DeRozan is talking about this stuff.
Well, I'm not, you know, I'm immodest, but I would have to say I have saved, I've said this before, probably tens of thousands of lives. To say I'm the Oscar Schindler of radio is really not an overstatement.
I've not heard the tagline, the Oscar Schindler of radio. That's a good 2019 slogan for you.
It's a grabber.
Yeah. Either. Well, I will say this. I guarantee you, whether it's tens of thousands or not, I guarantee you probably got some people to think.
Oh, no question. I mean, the feedback I got, important. Right. I was amazed. I might even say this in our interview, and we'll get to the other stuff in a second. The amount of emails I got at the beginning were crazy and still get. From people, from guys who listen to me who are 45 years old and have a couple of kids and work a job. And it still is the last sort of, you know, male stigma. I think it's still the last thing that guys are sort of embarrassed to talk about. I have no idea why anymore, really, but this is it.
Well, unfortunately, it still floats back to generations before that. You know, if you're in your 40s, you had a... You know, you had a parent, if they're still alive, obviously they're likely in their 70s. But that generation, particularly of men, was like it was a weakness to sort of talk about any kind of
Think of what their dads were like, you know?
Yeah, impossible. Yeah, I can't even imagine. Like, it's inconceivable to me to think about what my mother's grandfather sort of could have thought about all this stuff. Because it was never discussed. I mean, Kirk, we're not so far removed. Like, people, like, going in, like, if you say, hey, I'm feeling down or I'm feeling blue, like, they give you shock treatments. Like, we're, like, 50, we're only 40 years, like, removed from that.
Correct.
It's insane how medieval this country was on all that shit. But, yeah, I think it still is the last frontier because, you know, men talk about sex publicly. They talk about, I think, money publicly. I mean, that's it. It's really, that's kind of, like... The last bastion, and it will change. By the way, cool thing is the 20-year-old, the 15-year-old, the 25-year-old guy. The stigma's not there, and I think people are not as I don't know what the word is, but they're okay to sort of talk about that because again, I think just they've seen more of this publicly. I would actually add again, I realize it's not the sort of the subject of your podcast, but the United States is so far behind just in terms of mental health. Resources and education, and I hope it's probably not going to happen in our lifetime, but I do hope 100 years from now, like that stuff, like is thought about the same way, like cancer, the flu, like because it is a health issue and one that affects as many people as all these other health issues.
What is your take on? So you know, obviously, a big reason why I left is because of this activist Bob Murchison, what he did. You just saw, I'm sure, the Sword and Scale podcast where he was taken down by a couple of people who are contacting advertisers. We see it with Tucker Carlson. We saw the attempt to with Joy Reid. It happens all over the place. Just as somebody, I understand, obviously, you're left-leaning, first of all. But secondly, secondly, a member of the media, what do you think about this? I mean, what is your take? When does it end? Is there a tipping point? It seems right now this culture war, and I do believe if Hillary Clinton had beat Donald Trump, I think the anger from these activists would have been lessened. They wouldn't be doing this stuff. But where do you think, first of all, A, what do you think of it? And B, when does it end?
Well, first off, the stuff in Boston, I'm not up to speed on that. I mean, I know that you had a guy who disliked you, was calling sponsors, et cetera.
I just mean bigger picture, you know.
Yeah, I don't know much about the latest with Murchison.
Murchison, yes.
Murchison, okay. In terms of the bigger picture, that's a good question.
I mean,
where does it end? Well, I mean,
well, have you done it? Hold on, Richard. Have you done it from your little Twitter spot, which is obviously a lot of politics, which is good. I like that. You're passionate. But from your spot, have you retweeted something? Have you said, hey, go after Tucker Carlson or go after this person?
I've certainly retweeted when I think somebody has sort of said something. First of all, as a general rule, especially when it comes to the media stuff, I'm not one to generally fire or suspend anybody when it comes to things that they say. I mean, you can even go back and look at my Twitter on Curt Schilling. I didn't think he should be suspended, certainly for the first couple. Where do I stand? I think the public has a right to vote with their wallet. So I think the public absolutely has power in terms of if they do not like what a particular person is saying, and if it goes over a certain line, and that's like where this thing gets interesting, because like what is the line? The public has the power to not to pay for or not to consume the advertisers of a show. Where it gets a little tricky, obviously, of course, is the whole sort of notion of sort of free speech, who controls that, and when an activist is doing something not necessarily for any reasons other than their own selfish reasons. So where do I stand? I think you got to take it on honestly like a case-by-case basis. I will say, though, that the power that the public honestly has at the end of the day is the only, and you know this from working the media, and I know this, the only thing, generally speaking, corporations and media bosses listen to involves economics and money.
No question.
The only way you could really hurt somebody is to try to go after their sponsors. There's almost nothing else as a general rule that works. A lot of what Tucker Carlson says totally disgusts me. Would I walk outside demanding he get off the air? No, I would not.
What's interesting to me is, so you say the general public, but what it turns out to be oftentimes, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Sword and Scale story, this podcast.
I'm not.
So essentially two other podcasters did what happened sort of to me and Jerry is they targeted a bunch of sponsors. So it wasn't, it's like the general public is, 5,000 people. Oftentimes it could be one or two people that just bludgeon sponsors to the point where they just say, I can't deal with this shit anymore.
But that's up to
of course.
That's when you hope sponsors will
step up,
not be impacted and sort of toe the line. It's one thing, it's at least with the Carlson thing, from just my reading, I think a lot of the sponsors on their own decided to pull. Wasn't necessarily a coordinated campaign. They made decisions. In your situation here, again, you would hope that whoever the company is, they ultimately make a decision on what their comfort level is and what's best for them. But listen, activism on all sides, it can be very, very tough to push back. And that's not just a left-leaning thing. That's centrist and right-leaning. I mean, we got lobbyists all over this country in terms of being able to push stuff. And particularly now in today's politicized environment, there's a lot of pressure.
Is Schefter owned whatever he meant when he said that it was a bigger name than Kraft on this list?
No, he has not, from what I understand, ever come out publicly and clarified what he meant by that. Now, I don't really want to play the speculation game because obviously we have seen some big names sort of tangentially associated.
Well, I mean, obviously the president's connected.
Yeah, I'm no Trump lover, but like it would seem to be a little implausible to think that that's what Adam Schefter was referring to. A lot of times this happens with, and again, I actually like Schefter a lot. I think he's a very good reporter. But this happens with Schefter, Rappaport. I'm sure it's happened with me too. Is you when you tweet something out, you can couch the word a little bit. So if you end up being wrong, you could sort of say, hey, I didn't say it absolutely or definitively. I said this might happen, this happened. But Schefter did on this one say, a source told me that there's a bigger name. So in this case, for him, the out could be, I got bad sourcing, the source didn't know it. But I think, again, Adam has not commented on this. I think if he was going to be honest, I absolutely think he would not have done it. He was talking. I feel like he was talking extemporaneously.
Yes.
On a SportsCenter hit, he gave up something that was really juicy that he knew, and then he was like, "I'm sure when he sort of thought about it, he was like, holy fuck, like this is a much bigger story than I realized." You know, when you're Adam Schefter or Adrian Wojnarowski, Peter King, etc., like anything you say, particularly online, that's a national story. I don't know what that's like, but like for those guys, you do. I think in that situation, you always got to, like, remember, like, the second you say something, that is not just, like, local news. That's national news. And in the bigger name one, if I had to guess, I'm not sure that's ever going to come to fruition. And I'm sure if you're Schefter and ESPN, you just want it to go away.
What's weird, you know, so we had some fun. He came on with us a lot. He's always been good. Whenever we want him, he called. Yeah. We get him on. He's great.
Good.
He's
very good with that.
Yeah, and, you know, we made fun of him a lot because he said the Patriots wouldn't trade Garoppolo for 4 first-round picks. And, again, he said that on TV. He didn't tweet that out. So I think sometimes he gets caught up in the moment. I could totally see that happening.
Yeah, the one thing – here's the thing, and we've all been burned by this. Like, you know, you want to get information out, like, so quick, and you'll tweet something out. And like it's not 100%. Like, you know, you're not sending out something that's dishonest or for what you believe to be inaccurate. But like, just stories change and things happen, and that's not like a permanent record. Where in the old days, you know, if you're Schefter in 1992 working on the Denver Post, you know, you write something, and then you talk to your editor, and you at least have a sounding board who's like, you know what, Adam, I don't think you got this 100%. Let's like wait a day and make sure that we totally have it, and then it never goes out the way like that individual tweet goes out. But I'm putting myself in there. We've all put something out there where, you know, you think you have the 100% the story, and maybe you got 95%. Where you obviously don't want to be is you don't ever want to be in a situation like Morton was
right,
in, where you get really bad sourcing on a really important story to a lot of people, and you put something out there, and it's out there forever.
I'm stunned. If you had told me a year and a half ago, when this all started, how minimally the Me Too movement has hit professional sports, A, the media, B, you know, the owners, obviously, you know, Richardson, but, you know, how minimally it's been, I would have been shocked. I wait every day. I expect to see Ronan Farrow attacking the world of professional sports, whether it's, you know, the media, whether it's owners, whether it's players. I have to admit, I am shocked at how little has come out of it.
It will happen. I think your instinct is right. I think it's just going to be at the back end of the cycle, after politicians and after actors, actresses, after Hollywood. And I think the reason for that is because of the reporters who have been working on these kind of stories are, generally speaking, have more of a news, political or entertainment background.
Are you saying this? Are you saying this with some knowledge, or?
No, I think I'm just saying this as a person who, like,
right,
sort of just logically. There's no way that, like, that this situation has not happened in either professional sports or the sports media.
Checks all the boxes, right.
Yeah, it's inconceivable to think that it has happened in other parts of society and not those parts. I just think that the my thought would be that the people who have looked into this, there's reporters at the New York Times and the Washington Post who really sort of become specialists on this. I just think their circles are more politics, entertainment, and their, you know, the tips that they've received or the world that they're in, they're just not in the sports world. I do think eventually that we're going to see more of this stuff come out, because there's no way that this sports world is not sort of has not been part of this. We saw, you know, we've seen a little inklings of it.
Richardson.
We have not seen anything on the scale of, Weinstein, Moonves.
Oh, Spacey or Lauer.
Yeah, Spacey. But Rose. It's coming. Whether it's going to be a professional sports owner, whether it's going to be, I'm not saying this with knowledge of something, but having talked to so many people in the business, we will see one in sports media, I think, sooner than later. I cannot see that a big story from that world doesn't come out soon.
What is going to be the Monday Night Football? I mean, obviously it's a disaster. This Tess guy is fucking terrible.
Yep.
I guess they'll have Tess and Booger, and then they'll spend a bunch of money for some guy and have no idea if he's gonna be good or not, like they always do. Is that going to be the plan?
Well, I think the latest now is that it might just be Tess and Booger. They may just go with two people this year and then see how that group gels. And then, you know, think about if there's going to be any changes 1 year from now. Again, I think they were given a gift by the fact that Witten went back.
No question.
To me, you know, at a base minimum, I would bring somebody else in who just to sort of change up the booth. And you have a chance to bring in someone like, and again, I've said this a million times, I think Lewis Riddick is their best football analyst there. I think Kurt Warner would be great. I mean, they have a chance to bring in somebody pretty good. And I think they should do that at a minimum. But from what I've heard, they are thinking about just going with McFarland and Tessitore and seeing how that plays. I will say this, Kirk. There's no way the booth won't be better this year than last year just because Witten was so not ready for primetime.
Well, here's
the
booth's
going to be better. Booth's going to be better just with his elimination.
I'll never understand for the life of me. I've done this 3 million times. So did they like spend any time like in the booth like before they hired, before they paid him millions of dollars, did they ever find out if, you know, he was any good? Did they do a game? Did they do a couple of mock games?
So there's a couple things here. One, they throughout the time that like places like Monday Night Football, Sunday Night Football, CBS, Fox, they meet with people in production meetings during the course of the season. And Jason Witten was one of those people when the broadcasters met with him, they really liked, thought he was honest. Thought he was interesting, and you know they sort of marked down, here's a guy who potentially could be a broadcaster down the road if that's what he was interested in. When they find out Witten's interested, he does do a test game with ESPN along with the other 14 candidates. He hangs out with Tessitore at Tessitore's house. They do a whole sort of, you know, chemistry thing.
Right, I read all
and
that.
And it's very clear, and I have no doubt about this, it's very clear Witten probably away from the mic is, you know, a fun guy to either a fun guy to be with, or you know, everybody calls him Captain America. He's super polite. You know, he owns the room when he walks in. Good looking guy, et cetera, blah 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 blah. So I think this is just my take. I think ESPN becomes like enamored with like the idea of Jason Witten. They love having this Hall of Fame type guy. He's a Dallas Cowboy. Tony Romo just had this massive success, so they're going to get their own Tony Romo. And you are correct. Like, the one thing that, like, doesn't exist is he's just not very good. And so the one question mark I would have, and this, by the way, I like Tessitore a lot, and I totally believe him when he tells me this. Everybody told me that Witten tested great. I'm just trying to figure out how that's possible, because when the red light went on, it wasn't there. Now, a lot of times, as broadcasters will tell you, and Kirk, you know this, sometimes people are just awesome, like away from a mic, mm-hmm. and then you put them in front of a mic, or you put them in front of a television camera, and they freeze.
Yeah, no, we would do that
with... It freaks with their head.
Right. We would do that
so
with...
Maybe that's what happened to Witten.
We would do that with third guys in with our show. You know, you'd say, oh, this guy's kind of funny off the air, and he's got some stories. And then you bring him on the air, and that I totally get. It's just, you know, this colossal, insane screw-up. How many more years does that... Two questions. How many more years is Al Michaels going to do this? And secondly, at what point does Tirico, speaking of Me Too, at what point does Tirico get frustrated being sort of everybody's backup? I saw him this weekend. I watched a lot of the golf. The Players' Championship, he's Dan Hicks' backup. He's sort of Al Michaels' backup. At what point does... And I know he's making a lot of money. Does Tirico get frustrated with sort of this insignificant role in the NBC mix?
Well, I think it helps. I mean, listen, money does help. That's the one thing. Where Tirico's really helped is that he has... one thing that's a mega thing that's his own, and that's the Olympics. So
that's right.
Got one of the
best.
If you like the Olympics, and he does, he has one of the best jobs out there. He also has, you know, he has a football package that's his own, and that's Notre Dame. Again, it is not Sunday Night Football, but it is something that's his. The reason why this works is Tirico and Michaels have a really good relationship. So I don't think Tirico is sort of somebody who, you know, behind the scenes is trying to sort of push Al out of there. NBC also has done a pretty good job, at least in my opinion, of giving Tirico some games when they had Thursday Night Football, giving Tirico some NFL games when Al's been away. If I'm right about this, NBC has the Super Bowl coming up. Is it next year? They have the Super Bowl coming up pretty quickly, and I would not be surprised if that Super Bowl game is Michael's last game doing Sunday Night Football full-time, and that's when they make the transition. So I would just say this, Kirk. I know that there's probably part of Tirico that's, like, frustrating, but, like, you know what? Like, to suck it up for 2 years to essentially get the best broadcasting job in the NFL, which is to call primetime, you know, the NFL's best games every week on a Sunday. If you're Tirico, I feel like you just...
you know, you suck it up for a couple of years, and then it's your job for 15.
Am I stuck with boring Grant Hill again doing the Final Four?
You are.
Oh,
you
Jesus.
Are getting Grant Hill, but
he sucks.
You know, if you like Raftery, you know that will be there, and if you like Nance,
why not just have Nance? Nance and Raftery do it?
Yeah, you know what? I personally think Nance and Raftery are great, great guys. I've really enjoyed dealing with them, but I'd be the first to say, like, that should not, if you are just being honest about what would be the best college basketball announcing team that should do those games, it should be Harlan or Ian Eagle. Or Brian Anderson.
Yeah, but
better
I mean, but Nance,
college basketball
but Nance
callers
takes,
than
yeah, yeah,
Nance.
But,
and I would say that I got no problem with Raftery, actually. I feel like Raftery is the number one analyst.
But you know what happened. Nance takes his dick out, and he's the big guy at CBS. And that's
is
just
the
how,
face of CBS?
It's
his job for as long as he wants. That is just how that's how it works sometimes.
The best college basketball crew is when they're doing it is McDonough and Billis with Raftery.
Love those guys.
I mean,
unfortunately, we will never hear them call a game on TV. We might be, you know, if you get the international call, the
True.
Radio call or something. But yes, McDonough and Billis were great. And I give ESPN a lot of credit. You know, ESPN gets knocked a lot of times. But you know what? They were pretty smart. They decided to make Billis their number one guy and sort of move Vitale into a retirement package. And that, you know, that could have been more ugly than it was, but they pulled that off pretty nicely, and that's the right call. Billis is far and away their best analyst and more of a guy who fits in 2019 than, you know, Vitale screaming about how great the Coach K is.
I have never in my life seen a television broadcaster, and I was younger when Madden sort of got big, make the impact in conversation and social media that Romo has. Nobody ever. I don't even think it's a debate.
I agree. I think I realize it's kind of crazy to say. I think there's an argument to be made that Tony Romo is the best NFL analyst of all time already, including regardless of how long
there's
Madden
no, there's,
been out there.
There's no, I don't think it's any argument. He's the best.
Yeah,
he's the best of all time.
Madden's impact. I was never the biggest Madden guy, but you're correct. No one has ever sounded or brought to an NFL broadcast what Romo has. And he did a number of things for CBS. One, he game-changed, I think, reputationally what you think of them, because you always, I feel like, even if you like CBS, you kind of thought of them as old and stodgy mm-hmm. and conservative, and he changed that. Now it's like the hot broadcast. And the other thing, and this was an amazing thing, he revitalized, I feel like, Jim Nance.
No question.
Probably by the end of the time with Phil Simms, just wanted to, you know, probably couldn't take it anymore. And now I think Nance wants to do football for another 10 years. Nance sounds refreshed. I mean, Jim Nance was making jokes in the NFL booth.
Right.
That is a great team. Romo is far and away. He's the best working sports analyst on television now, and I would argue he's the best NFL analyst already of all time. That's the kind of hire you make. That like is a once in a 50-year hire. I mean, CBS. Anyone who thinks CBS is going to let Romo go, they're insane.
Well, what's his contract?
Out a way to make that work, no matter what. You never let a talent like that go.
What's his contractual situation?
He's up in a year and a half. This is a guess. I honestly don't know what he makes, but let's sort of just say conservatively, he makes probably between like $3 and $4.5 million right now.
He'll be
able to name his price, but I've talked to Tony a lot. He's a loyal guy. He loves working with the production crew that's there. That's the crew that basically worked with him prior to his being on the air. It's the one he feels the most comfort with. And he's made $150 million. So I don't feel like this is the guy who's going to be like, you know, CBS, if you don't pay me an extra $1 million, I'm leaving. It's just that's not – I think he's going to want a guarantee that he's going to be the number one guy, which I'm sure they're going to do. I'm sure he's going to want a certain raise, and he's going to get market value. But they're going to – I predict they will quietly, in the next couple months, let you know that Tony Romo has signed a multi-year extension. They're not letting that guy go. You will never see that guy, in my opinion, on the open market.
What is Mark? So I know Gruden's gone. What's market value? Collinsworth making $5 million? Is Aikman making $5 million?
I think, so Gruden supposedly made $6.5 million,
right.
$7 million, something like that. He might have actually gotten a raise in his last go-around. Collinsworth supposedly is in the $3 to $5 million camp, so... if Gruden set the mark, let's say, let's just say conservatively $7 million, I would think Tony Romo's getting $8 million and up per year, and he will be worth every penny.
It's wild, absolutely wild. But I mean, but then you think of it like, you know, the reality is that Sunday night, that Sunday 4:25 That's CBS package game, exactly. Is also the biggest property CBS has. So whatever you're paying fucking Jim Parsons or whoever.
Correct.
Romo's a bigger star than they are.
You're smart. That's exactly how you should look at it. Whoever CBS's highest paid entertainment talent is, I'm sure at one point it was Letterman, I'm sure it might be the cast of Big Bang Theory, like whatever that is, Romo's worth more.
No, but the only argument
is entertaining 30 million people a week, while those other shows are entertaining 15.
Oh, the only argument I guess you can make conversely is if you take a big star of a sitcom, no one's going to watch it. If you take Romo off of Sunday 425,
they'll still
and put
watch it. Yeah, I agree with that. But yeah, that's true. But that's, if I was his agent, I think you have to look at, he is essentially the most important part of CBS's most important television broadcast. And the other thing, the other argument to make that the sports guys make, which I think is right, is you can highlight all your great programming on Sunday as a promotional tool. I don't know how great it is on the reverse. Like, I don't know how great it is to promote Cowboys, Patriots on Big Bang Theory. But the other way,
huge.
You know, you're getting 30 million people to promote all of CBS's lineup. That's pretty valuable.
And also, yeah, and also gives 60 Minutes a massive lead in. Just
60 Minutes will never not be on the air as long as they do not move 60 Minutes from that spot.
So last time we really talked, forget our conversation in November, maybe a year ago. I mean, ESPN was just a mess. I mean, they were just disasters left and right. Is ESPN? And I'll admit, since I've been out of the morning sports world, I don't watch Get Up much. I don't pay that much attention. I mean, obviously, it's terrible. I know that without watching it. Is ESPN in better shape than they were, say, a year ago?
Wait, you don't watch Get Up, Kirk?
I don't watch Get Up.
So you're like 320 million other Americans.
Can I just say that, can I give ESPN, I never give them any credit. I actually like that basketball A Love Story documentary. Shit like that, they do well.
Features, actually. They're,
right,
they're
that they still
best,
do well.
They're probably best in class. In terms of where they are, well, the one thing that they've done is, you know, they've done a great job of getting the narratives, the bad narratives, whether they were true or not, out of there. Not many people are talking about ESPN and politics anymore. They've improved their relationship with the NFL, which was essentially Jimmy Pitaro's biggest charter, because they want to be in the business of the NFL. John Skipper was not an NFL guy. And so, yeah, I mean, what they've done is, you know, they calmed the waters a little bit, and they're in a better place. Their Monday Night Football package was up, so as everybody else's were, so ratings-wise, they got a good story. College basketball is up. You know, the thing, too, is they also, and this gets a little deeper in the woods, but, you know, they have a pretty good story on their streaming service. They got UFC, and they have a lot of people who have purchased that because they want to watch the UFC fight. So, yeah, what you're saying is totally true. They're in a better place right now, at least optically, today than they were 1 year ago. I mean, 1 year ago, they're every other day they were in the news cycle, and, you know, including being called out by, like, the White House. So that's, you know, if you're a sports network, it's just not where you want to be.
I just had a moment of clarity. You know, I've been so critical of Jamel, and she and I have battled on Twitter. She now blocked me. In a way, we're sort of cousins in that, you know, I would get in trouble all the time. I had trouble with the Red Sox, and it was trouble with the station. And getting rid of me has probably calmed things down, may not help ratings, but it's kept things quieter. Same with her. I think maybe I should call her and apologize. We're actually maybe kind of the same person.
Yeah, this is the first and last time I think I might hear the parallel that you two are the same. I know her much more. More than I know you, at least.
This is a moment of, I'm having a moment
personally,
here.
But it's good. This is good to see that, like,
this
sort of
progress.
A new Kirk taking shape and make amends for some things in the past.
I mean, the show is fucking awful, but I mean, still, I think we can maybe come to some moment. All right, I'll let you go.
Well, she's not at ESPN anymore, so.
Yeah, what is she doing sense, anyway? You know, what is she doing?
She's staff writer for The Atlantic, has her own production company, and you'll see her doing, being part of some documentaries and stuff like that. You know, not to mention, obviously, sort of traveling the country, talking to people. Interestingly enough, and again, not to sort of put words in her mouth, but I think that the next chapter of her life is going to be far more satisfying than being on ESPN, because at a certain point, I don't know about you, at a certain point, I do feel like even if you're getting paid a ton of money and even if you have sort of sports television fame, you're sort of like just talking about the same thing every day.
Yes.
It can get a little bit.
It sure can.
You know what I mean? I don't know if monotonous is the right word or
yes,
like
it is.
Not satisfying. But
you just feel,
you know,
like I could just tell
how
you.
How many right. sports centers can you do? How many get-ups can you do? That's sort of how
I can just tell you from my end. I just stopped caring about a fucking Celtics game in February or Red Sox game. I'm not saying I didn't care 10 years ago. I just don't. And going on and pretending to care about it, you just get more and more pissed off.
I will say this. I'm just sort of just to personalize it for one second, whether anybody who's listening even cares. But having moved to a new city, having moved to Toronto, I find myself actually loving sports that much more because all the stuff's new to me. Like, the Raptors are new to me. The Maple Leafs are new to me. The Blue Jays are new to me. And it's helped where I can totally understand where you're coming from. You know, you're in the market for, you know, 15 years and, like, you know, another, like, you know, another Celtics Wizards game. I mean, it's hard to get up for that.
Jeez. All right, I'll let you go. I'm sure you got things to do. We can. Oh, wait, the podcast. Tell everybody where to get the podcast.
Yeah. Thank you. I really didn't come on for any kind of promotion.
That's not what you told me before the show.
The sports media
fine.
Podcast continues. Kirk Minahan was a guest of that podcast.
Yes.
6 months ago, and the latest is Michael Kay. You, I know, since you're a radio head,
I listened to it.
Michael Kay, who was very, very honest. Michael Kay and I went 45 minutes, but 15 of those minutes were about Mike Francesa. And the in Kay's words, the lack of grace that Francesa has had over the years. It was pretty honest and interesting stuff. So that's the latest on the sports media podcast.
You know, a year ago I would have been way more critical of Kay for not hitting Dolan hard enough. But at the same time, you want to keep that relationship. When a guy is that fucking loony, you want to keep having him on as much as you can. If that
well, the
makes
one
sense.
Thing this is what I think you were really good at, as well as Kay is too, and I think the best radio people are. You just want to keep that guy in the room talking,
yes.
And he kept James Dolan, who does not do a lot of media, for 47 minutes. I don't think the public knows how tough that can be because, you know, these are guys who one question goes the wrong way, they're off, they lose their minds.
And then you lose them forever.
In your position, in Kay's position, in Minahan's position, your job is to keep that guy on the air as long as you can because you basically own the city's sports conversation that day when that person's on the air.
I was listening to Simmons with Brian Curtis, the they did like one of those media ones the other day, and Simmons made a good point. Sometimes you just forget when you listen to the interview, sometimes you just forget that some of these owners just got jobs from their dads and they're fucking crazy.
Yes.
It's fucking crazy. Like they get attached with the misters and the billionaires, and it's all bullshit. They're just fucking nuts.
Well, again, not that either of us have experienced this, but if your ass is kissed for like 55 years, you essentially get everything you want in terms of all your desires. It's pretty hard to live in the real world.
Yeah, you lose touch of reality.
Yeah.
It's true. All right. Thanks. So we'll have you on again soon. Three times, by the way.
I appreciate
podcast.
That. When your show is off and running, I wish you the best of luck with that.
All right, Richard, I'll talk to you. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Kirk. See ya.
See ya. Thanks.
The Women's Hoop Show, a podcast hosted by me, Jordan Robinson, brings you fresh women's basketball voices and breakdowns every week. I'll be joined by hoop experts all year long. Find the Women's Hoop Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.